I am very happy for that which has been presented in the meantime, especially in the last session with Irina, and now in this session with Gulsaira, with the connection between the human being and the cosmos, and how we were able to experience this in an artistic way. And I would like to connect and think that that which I have as a verse by Rudolf Steiner that I'd like to share with you, that it is very much in this connection. But first of all, I would like to read it to you, and you can read this later, so you can just listen to it for the moment. What Rudolf Steiner gave to us is very interesting. It's the world and the human being, and the subtitle is The Peace Dance. And there are two dates on which he gave this to us. Once in 1914 as in a text, and then also in connection with Eurythmy on the 10th of July 1924, so that you can find it. You can find this in Truth Wrought Words in the Complete Works number 40, for those of you who know it, or in our Eurythmy book, Eurythmy as Visible Speech. The world, the cosmos, and the human being, the peace dance. The wishes of the soul are springing. The deeds of the will are thriving. The fruits of life are maturing. I feel my destiny. My destiny finds me. I feel my star. My star finds me. I feel my goals. My goals find me. My soul and the wide world are one. Life grows more radiant about me. Life grows more challenging for me. Life grows more abundant in me. Thank you for the text. When we look at the first lines, we can see that the soul is being spoken to, the soul of the human being, and then the will that is connected to the I, to the self, and then life, life that is connected with everything that transforms. And then a large dimension of destiny comes with which I'm connected, and my star. Each person, one could say, has a star. There are enough stars for all human beings on the earth. And then, my goals. This reaches into the future. And this connects to the aspect of becoming and the ideals that give me direction. And this is gathered together in my soul and the wide world are one, an inward connection between the inner aspect of the soul of the human being and the cosmos. And this inner aspect, this relationship of the human being to the world, means on the one hand a lightness, a radiance, but also something that relates to responsibility. And this doesn't make it easier. This doesn't make it lighter for us, but it makes it heavier. It makes it more challenging for us. And in this way, our life grows richer. It becomes more abundant. In this process, how we are united with the cosmos, and that this is named the peace dance. This is something which is very important nowadays. And this is clear that this peace starts with each individual person, that each person needs to find it in themselves and for themselves. And this is quite a challenge, especially for people who have been affected by trauma, to have this peaceful connection to human beings and to the world. And so, I'd like to read it once again, to read this text once again, so that we can have these thoughts resonating and experience them while we're hearing it. Cosmos and human being, the peace dance. The wishes of the soul are springing. The deeds of the will are thriving. The fruits of life are maturing. I feel my destiny. My destiny finds me. I feel my star. My star finds me. I feel my goals. My goals find me. My soul and the wide world are one. Life grows more radiant about me. Life grows more challenging for me. Life grows more abundant in me. So now I'd like to deepen this with an exercise from Louise Redeman. And this is called Finding Inner Peace. And this can be found in the book Who You Were Before Trauma, The Healing Power of Imagination for Trauma Survivors. I have spoken about this before. She is prevalent in the German-speaking world as a trauma therapist and also trains other trauma therapists. And you don't have this text. You can't read it and experience it. So it's really about listening to it for the moment and following it. But in the proceedings, you will receive this and you can then read it later. It is already prepared for you so that you can find it. So I will read this text by Louise Redeman. And it is about, I will just be reading it in a free manner, not word for word. And it is about thinking of a situation in life in which you were completely at peace with yourself, at one with yourself, and that in this moment you have as many memories that can come up so that you experience peace. And when you have this, when the situation is not quite as strong as you'd like it to be, as you actually felt it at the time, then you can think of a situation of the most recent days, perhaps, and that's usually more easy. where you were not at peace with yourself and where you let memories come up and you feel them. And now you can imagine this as a picture that the part of you that is completely at peace with oneself goes to the other part of yourself and speaks to them, perhaps puts their arms around him, to this part which is not at peace with himself, and in a friendly, loving, accepting contact to connect with touch, through words, or through both, even as it seems right for you. But in any case, it should be something supportive and loving. And the next step, these two elements, the element at peace and the element that is not at peace, to take these into your heart, because they all belong to the inner aspect of yourself, to your inner heart. And then the I of today, the I embraces both states, and you could imagine that you are enveloped or enclosed by a light that means peace for you. Choose a color, a light color that means peace for you. And when you look at this from the outside, when you would be the observer, you see yourself in this color, sitting in this light, streaming around you. And this color that is appropriate for you as a color of peace. And then return your attention to the space, to the room where we are now, where you are now. Whenever you do exercises like this, it's very important to come back consciously from this sort of imaginative space, so that you come back with your senses, so that you don't hang around in a space in the outer world. This, as we've just heard, this could be a tendency in traumatized people, that you lose yourself in the outer world. So when you actually look at the text, you'll see that I've left out a certain part. Louise Redeman speaks about blue, sky blue, and I feel we don't have to choose this color. You can choose whichever color you feel is right for you. So you can use her suggestion or leave it aside. And so now I will go to the content. And I'd like to do this rather swiftly so that we have enough time for questions. In the original edition, we were going to also talk about association and dissociation as phenomena, but we did this in our last presentation. And so I can go straight to the post-traumatic growth, or you could say post-traumatic maturing. And if you look at this, when this is talked about, this was talked about in the 90s, and we had experienced and heard that this trauma concept in the 90s was taken up as a diagnosis, And the first people who experienced this, that there was a post-traumatic growth, those were Tedeschi and Cahoon, two researchers from the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. And they formulated this as post-traumatic growth is the experience of positive change that is born as a result of the struggle with highly challenging life crises. It manifests in a variety of ways, including an increased appreciation for life in general, more meaningful interpersonal relationships, an increased sense of personal strength, changed priorities, and a richer existential and spiritual life. So you can see that this is a very brief definition of the content. And the phenomena is that people, despite having a traumatic crisis and psychological forces being very limited, one can also discover new things, and that a growth and maturing is possible, so that new possibilities come up. And we've had this today in art, and we heard this from Irina last time. In the German-speaking world, it has also been summarized by Tanja Zöllner at the terminology where post-traumatic growth refers to positive psychological changes reported by those affected as a result or consequence of the process of coping with extremely stressful life events. And if we look at this individually, these phenomena that one can establish and research, not just by psychologists and not just post-traumatic growths, but in many other difficult illnesses, even as I explained in our first session, the phenomena which we find is an intensified appreciation of life, coupled with a changed awareness of what is essential. And that really is quite a big step, to have this strengthened consciousness for your life possibilities, and that your life is able to judge what is essential and non-essential, and that personal relationships would become more intense, and then that one can judge what is important, which relationships are important, and which relationships do not hold, do not carry. And you often find that relationships and the network of relationships become clearer. Another phenomena of an increased feeling of compassion for others, empathy for others, not just for yourself, but for other people in need. And also, the qualities that you become more aware of your own strengths, of your own resources. And this is very important in order to manage the trauma. and also one's own vulnerability. And this can manifest through a traumatic experience, that one becomes more sensitive, the senses become more sensitive, and that the soul and spiritual aspects come more to the fore, and that makes you more vulnerable. And that you didn't really notice this before the trauma. And also new possibilities in life can come up. Even when you are mourning the loss of certain aspects of life, but a certain future aspect lives. And this is a great treasure in the post-traumatic growth. And especially an intensified spiritual awareness. I notice this in many patients. And it's very much more, the patients are much more interested in spiritual subjects or spiritual aspects of their own selves that can actually work therapeutically and perhaps even discover their own healing powers. And now we could ask, what sort of general aspects are there in the soul competencies that you could develop or practice? What would support? And the next slide, please. We find this element, the supporting positive emotions. And for that, there are many different ideas. They may seem very similar. And the one is that at the end of each day, write down three things. Three things that are connected positively with positive emotions. They don't have to be big things. They can be small things. If you saw a flower, or you had something that made a positive impression. Rudolf Steiner wrote about the positive exercise of positivity, to observe that which is positive. And then in the evening, you can have four questions that go in a similar direction. First of all, what brought me joy today? And then, what and who can I be grateful for today? Where did I feel alive today? What strengths was I able to express today? And so you see there are subjects of joy, subjects of thankfulness, feeling alive, discovering inner strengths that one can connect to, and that creates growth and maturing in the soul spiritual area. A rather fun idea is planning a positive activity. One is always thinking about having a lovely holiday and then everything will be better. But you can have a little holiday in the everyday. You can imagine plan a little mini vacation. Something that you've thought about. What positive activity can you do in 15 minutes or 20 minutes to have a little break in your everyday activities? And another is to find meaning in your everyday life. A traumatic experience, one usually asks, what is the point? And so it's another perspective, this gratefulness, this gratitude. What was the point of what happened? What was it good for? And how can you make this experience that you gained useful for yourself and for others? And what did the experience enable you to do? And this evokes a change of perspective. And it's not just experiencing how this touched me, but to make sense of it, to find the significance of it, and also to find how it helped other people. And this can also help you to integrate and to positively influence growth, soul growth. And there are many more things, and of course, all therapies belong to this. And so we first would have stabilization and then working with the traumatic experiences itself and with the difficult thoughts that come about. And then at the end, the integration and working through these to try and find sense, to make sense of it. And often one criticizes this because if you think of post-traumatic growth, it could tempt you, it could tempt you to attach something of value to what is otherwise experienced as meaningless. And there are critical voices who say these are only personal experiences, are not, they're only personal experiences. You can't really judge them. You can't really say something about them. And this can create stress. And one thinks, I have to develop post-traumatic growth. I have to show this growth. And so in a general way, patients who are in psychotherapy, the family or the friends ask them and say, how much longer are you going to be in therapy? When are you going to be finally better? And they often find this rather challenging comment. And Louise Redeman has experienced, and she says that 240 therapy sessions are needed. It doesn't just mean psychotherapy, but also other types of therapy in order to overcome a trauma. So one does need to work for a longer time on this, rather intensively, to work with the consequences of trauma. It could go faster, but it's important not to put yourself under pressure and not try to get over it as soon as possible. And then there's another subject which I find interesting. It has other phenomena with other bodily illnesses that bring one to a situation which one refers to as near-death experiences. And they used to be more anecdotal stories about this. Pim van Lommel, who researched this, he's a Dutch cardiologist working in the intensive care, and he looked at the people who had had a clinical death experience and studied what they reported, and he published in The Lancet, the medical journal, and also a book, Near-Death Experience in Survivors of Cardiac Arrest. And then there are new editions, Infinite Consciousness, New Medical Facts on Near-Death Experience, 2009 in the German. And there it's very interesting if you look at what changes take place after 2 years and after 8 years. And this has been formulated as greater self-acceptance and a changed self-image, more compassion for others, greater appreciation of life, liberation from fear of death, and belief in life after death. And that's quite special. And what is interesting is that people became more religious, not really more connected to the church, but more religious. And then changes in physical experiences and stronger feelings, increased intuitive feelings and this intuitive sensitivity. And I think it's very interesting that the changes of near-death experience are very similar to those of the post-traumatic maturation, and they have a medical connection. So being touched by a medical crisis, so that shows that the consciousness is almost in a death state. And when one is woken up again, that it has a sort of a traumatic aspect to it. And what is very interesting now, coming to a close, that there's a description of the near-death experiences by Steiner in Occult Science, Complete Works number 13, and you will find it in the text there, where he describes this, where he describes the near-death experience and how it affects the different bodily member sheaths. And I'll read the text. During life between birth and death, a separation of the etheric body only occurs in exceptional cases and only for a short time. the etheric body is connected directly to the physical body, and this also happens during the night, that the etheric body always stays connected to the physical body. So the text continues, if the human being in certain circumstances suddenly feels himself close to death, for instance, if he is drowning, or if a serious fall threatens during a mountain trip, then this can only happen, this experience, this near-death experience can happen when the etheric body is really separated from the physical body, and the etheric body, the former, remains connected with the astral body. And then, if through fright, there is a loosening of the etheric from the astral body, then the experience does not happen, because then, as in dreamless sleep, there is complete unconsciousness. So this is an extract out of a longer text in this book. And if you are interested, it's really worth reading. And in the German, it's on page 96 to 98. So the English might be a page or so before. Half a page before. And so I'd like to end there. And I see there are already quite a few questions. And I'll be very interested to know what we can take up. Thank you for following up till now. Theo needs to switch his microphone on. Thank you, Harold. So, questions have been coming in. And it's really wonderful that you've created so much space for questions today. So, Babs looked at your example of Louise Redeman and commented how important it is to come back consciously. And she says that if you've been traumatized, it's not a given that you can easily come back. Yes, this is so important to take note of this. It is a basic phenomena. One is often in a state of hyper arousal. You are not really present. Even though you are conscious, you are not really present. But you're sort of outside of yourself somewhere. And so there is this tendency, if you're doing an imaginative exercise, where you're in the soul pictures, and you're less connected to your physical body. So that's when you have to really make conscious act of coming back to yourself through the senses, to the body. And it might be necessary to say, come back to the space in the present. Take note of the space you're in. Feel your body. Feel where your feet touch the floor. Feel contact with your own body. Where you're sitting on the chair, for instance. So that you take hold of it consciously. So you arrive in here and now with your body. Navid Dad asks about the peace dance and this life becomes more challenging for me. In what connections do you see this? So I think here the connection is what you think of as superficial life, perhaps. You've never yet been confronted with a stroke of destiny. You might have the tendency to go through life in a superficial way and not quite see all the connections in your life and not quite see all the relationships and to see the significance of the relationships, and you don't somehow have this experience somehow. And you might think, well, that's a happy life, living so superficially, but it's certainly not a rich life. And if you once you have this experience that there are relationships between you and the world, as we discover, as we have talked about today, then life does not become easier. More questions come up. You walk through life in a more conscious way. And that is what is this challenging aspect, this heavier aspect. It's not about being depressed, because life does become more light, more radiant. But it's about the significance of life. And that's what this heaviness brings. Galina has asked to go back to trauma. Do I have to forgive the perpetrator? Well, that is one of these big questions, and I don't think you can answer it in a general way. In any case, it's not right to say you have to forgive. There are many situations where you cannot forgive. And in a practical way, you can say that the contact to the perpetrator should not be kept. And you should be clear when you're doing trauma therapy that there is no further damage done by the perpetrator to the person, to the client or patient. And in such cases, it is almost impossible to forgive. And there is an occult wisdom that forgiveness needs a certain wisdom in the person who has been traumatized. And if you have this wisdom, then it is easier to forgive. And that is the big difference. When these events are there that are caused by certain people, where you are personally touched by this and the whole of your circle is affected by it, it's also very different. If you're not just the only one suffering alone, and if there's a natural catastrophe, it's much more easy to speak about forgiveness, because there's a feeling of commonality and you can support one another. A natural catastrophe often has a lot of solidarity around it and a lot of helping one another, people supporting one another. And all these situations we find really nowadays all before us. And once you have said, and the question is so deep that maybe we can ask it again, the traumatic events, did we choose them before we were born? Well, yes. I think that we took... Yes, we chose to meet certain people, but we can't plan what those people are going to do to us. There was a similar question to this about destiny. So I wouldn't say that. But there is experiences that Steiner gave that children, before they are born, they have a preview of their life. We know about the panorama that we have afterlife, the afterlife panorama, but that before you're born, you have a preview of your life. And that in this preview, it can actually be quite scary, maybe. If you try and imagine what the gods of destiny have with us, have planned for us. So there was a camera that was flimmering. So there are phenomena that you can observe. Children who enter life very easily, and some children who come late. And you could imagine that that might be because they had maybe a fright of all the tasks that they are going to be faced with in this life. That one needs a lot of courage to face that. And that, yes, we need a lot of courage in order to face these things. And therefore, we can trust that we will manage these things during our life. And as Theodore says, on both sides. So, a question about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. What are the salutogenetic factors? What is non-growth? What stops growth in PTSD? Well, these factors are generally applicable. And what is perhaps not there after a traumatic event is that one can't understand what has happened, one can't work with it, and one does not find that it makes any sense. And these are really the central dimensions to the salutogenetic aspects, that you need to have a feeling that you understand the situation and the experience, that you can work with it, and that you can also get support in working with it. And that all of this together makes sense. And the post-traumatic growth expresses this. Post-traumatic maturity, that one would develop more competencies, develop more values, develop more goals in your life. These are very important factors to support therapeutically and to help the people to develop this salutogenetic development. A question by Natalie about dissociation in trauma. She quotes Kelly McDaniel. Dissociation as resilience. What do you say about this? Yes, this could be a resilience factor. It could be too strong. In the acute stress, it could be too strong. And so, in a sense, it makes sense that one dissociates so that you don't have too much pain or too much suffering. But then there's this principle that is taken up in therapy that one imagines oneself in this, as in a meditation, in a beautiful surrounding, as this imagination as a healing power, which of course it is, and this takes you out of the everyday life, but this is taken hold of consciously. And so it's not just in this first traumatic stress situation and in the event, but in the trigger situations, it also comes about. And then it comes in an exaggerated form. And there it's very important to have one's sense experiences, to feel oneself consciously, to say, how did I come into this situation? What was the trigger? And that one can get out of this situation. Maybe we have time for another two or three questions. Andrea connects to Steiner. This description of the near-death experience, where the etheric body is separated from the physical body, and you have this strange experience, and where the astral body is then loosened. And she asks, and then you connected this to trauma, that there's a similarity to this situation. And Andrea asks, if trauma that has not come to consciousness, is it less traumatic? Well, I don't think that's the case. There's the conscious memory. And that is not the same thing as memory. In German, they have two words for memory. So a conscious memory that you can just remember like a computer, that is then saved on the hard disk in the brain. And it's actually not saved in the brain, it's saved as a body memory. And this is more difficult. If you have this memory that is at the same time unconscious and it sort of rumbles around inside of you, But this can be a sort of a protection. And that's the question. Should one bore into these questions? And if the patient has something that they don't have as a conscious memory, and some people say you should do hypnosis to be able to draw it out, but my experience is that this is a rather questionable idea, and it makes more sense to leave it in the unconscious and through your own development with a positive way forward, that you then become strong enough to remember it. And that would then be the right moment to be able to work with this memory. Two questions at the end. Aneta asks, when a child has trauma right into the physical body, is there a chance to help them with psychological and spiritual help, even when medicine doesn't help? Well, yes, but trauma actually always works into the physical body. Usually, there are different levels which therapy affect. You can do them all together. And it's usually makes sense to have psychotherapy with body therapy, so movement or physiotherapy with guided movements that Peter Levine developed. And the middle is the art therapy, and that is the usual way of judging them. Rudolf Treichler said that logotherapy, the spiritual, most spiritual therapy, is art therapy, and that the conversational therapy is lower down, and connecting the spirit with the body is the most important thing. It's such a wonderful idea. And the very last question, there are so many wonderful questions. Not quite provocative, it is meant seriously, that life becomes more challenging for me. And we have this open consciousness and the everyday I and the higher self says, why does life need to be more difficult? How do you see this? Yes, this is a little bit confrontational. The higher self is connected, and you experience people who are spiritually striving and walking the path of development. They do not just have an easy life. There is another perspective with more having more distance, being able to observe things, being able to take the role of observer, that one can emphasize this, and it's also emphasized in the Buddhistic, in the Buddhist-oriented therapies. But the human being on all levels is human being and stands in the world.